meeting of Parliament, Friday the 19th of July. The session is semi-ordered with all of the key principles. Mr. Speaker, I'd best to move on to Standing Order 7-3 to suspend Standing Order 7-1 in order to secure a government statement. Those in favour? Those against? Carried.
identified that as one of the most difficult areas, but I'm
hopeful that we can also mention a few things about how we are prepared to move forward and accept those risks. To the Honourable Member for his reference to the work that we have done this week in respect of matters relating to Brexit. I know that they met a number of occasions with me and with the Deputy Chief Minister in relation to the matter. The fact is that I think everyone in the community is aware of the difficulties with leaving the European Union, whether with a deal or without a deal. Will create support. But also, as I'll be very clear with those who make a remark about the 96% support for staying in the European Union while in the referendum a few years ago. Because I think I reflect the view of the whole House that result is not in any way a reflection of any affection for the European Commission and its approach to Gibraltar. Or a lack of affection thereof, or therefore. What it was a reflection of the understanding that everyone in our community has of the importance of the European Treaty in ensuring that Gibraltar and its neighbour, Spain, have been able to enjoy a relationship without having to understand it bilaterally or otherwise. And of course, that is one of the issues that I think we face in the context of any type of Brexit. I am aware that next week the United Kingdom will be sending a number of officials to Gibraltar to continue the in-depth discussions we've held in respect of every area that will be affected by our withdrawal from the European Union, not least the border and issues relating to the rights of citizens, etc. And the Brexit Executive Group will be meeting today, chaired by the Deputy Secretary, and reporting to the Deputy Secretary. So, Mr. Speaker, I am grateful for the opportunity to take the House with the matter of special communication of the meeting. Thank you for standing order. The Honourable Deputy Secretary. A bill for an act to make provisions for the assignment, transfer, and vesting of certain rights, interest, and obligations from Gibraltar Residential Property Limited to GIC Limited. The exemption of the assignment and transfer from registration requirements under the Land Titles Act 2011, for the notice of the assignment and transfer to the relevant party and financing institutions, and for connected purposes. The Honourable the Chief Minister. Sorry, Chief Minister. Firstly, on the bill, I wish to confirm that I have received a letter from him signifying the urgency of this bill. The bill for an act to make provision for the assignment, transfer, and vesting of certain rights, interests, and obligations from Gibraltar Residential Properties Limited to GIC Limited. The extension of the assignment and transfer and registration requirements of the Land Titles Act 2011. For the notice of the assignment and transfer to relevant parties and financial institutions, and for collective purposes, be read in first time. I now put the question because that the bill for an act to make provision for the assignment, transfer, and vesting of certain rights, interests, and obligations from the Gibraltar Residential Properties Limited to GIC Limited, the extension of the assignment and transfer from registration requirements under the Land Titles Act 2011, for the notice of the assignment and transfer to relevant parties and financial institutions, and for the purposes to read a first time. Once in favor, once again, the Gibraltar Residential Properties Limited assignment, transfer, vesting, Education and Heritage Act 2019. beliefs, should there be any suggestion by any person or party that there is an adverse consequence to the current coronavirus, that would be entirely false and self-serving. And I'm therefore sure that no one will want to fall into the trap of suggesting something that is demonstrably and untrue and legally wrong. To consider, it is absolutely strict law that a contract cannot be changed in writing by one side to the agreement. There would be no enforceable problem if one side could change the contract without regard to the considerations of the other side to the agreement. So the co-partnership agreements remain the same, but are just now with a different counterpart. As members will be aware, the co-partnership interest owned by GRP are subject to the terms of a trust deed implemented by individual co-owners and GRP. This has been standard since the first co-ownership was a state was created under the administration of the father of the house. The difficulty of owning property in a co-ownership basis in new development entered into a trust deed with GRP on the time of purchase. This has been a standard part in the every single 50-50 transaction since the first state was developed at Montague Garden. Remarkably, Mr. Speaker, now or exactly 30 years ago. Because it caused and governed CRP's retention of an equitable interest in the properties sold in a co-ownership system. The document contained declarations by individual co-owners that such equitable rights are held on trust for GRP. The trustees also provide the mechanisms and terms under which an individual co-owner can exercise his or her option to consciously abstain from equitable interest in the property held by GRP. What this bill does to give effect to the completion of the assignment, transfer, and listing of such co-ownership interest and all rights, interests, and obligations under the trustee from GRP to GIC Limited. The bill exempts the assignment and transfer from the formal registration requirements under the Land Title Tax 2011, and it provides notice of the changes to all co-owners and financing institutions who have an interest in the assignment and transfer of these rights. The reason for this, Mr. Speaker, is that there are so many co-ownership properties that it will be very onerous indeed to have to specifically make the necessary changes to address GRP with GIC Limited. That is why we're doing this by way of a law. There have been many such bills and laws in the past. This might have been quite common, for example, when a bank sells a mortgage portfolio and one lender is replaced by another in hundreds or thousands of contracts. The mortgage or the loan agreement does not change in any way, shape, or form. The terms of the agreement is changed. The rights of the person who is keeping the mortgage or the loan don't change, and their obligations don't change also. The only thing that changes is the counterpart. So on one day you owe bank one £1,000, and that bank sells its loan book or mortgage business to another bank. Then by law, or alternatively, you can do it one by one by the relation agreement, you are told that your obligations have changed, but you must now send the bank two the same sum of money every month for the same period that you agreed with bank one. The terms do not change at all, and that is the situation with the credit. The underlying homeowners who owe by a co-ownership structure continue in exactly the same position as before. Absolutely nothing changes for them. The only difference is that they're going to be counterparty in the GIC Limited instead of the office. But all the terms are exactly the same. The right to sell, the time to sell, the conditions for sale, all remain identical under GIC Limited as they were under GRPL, and indeed all other terms remain identical too. One condition, Mr. Speaker, is that GIC Limited is, of course, not subject to litigation limited. As the implication of GRP, as a result of the construction issues affecting the Gibraltar branch of Gibraltar, and their litigation dispute with the former administration. I won't be able to say more about that particular aspect of the matter to honourable members of the organisation on this. As I said earlier, we have had with the group and all of this bill before we had to take the second meeting. And we need to speak up, I said as much in my public address, paragraph 192 of the written text, when I said that I expected to be able to take members through having a bit surprising of enough talent in a day and enough days in the week between my father's address and today to convene those meetings. He didn't speak up and say, oh, that I would have been able to convene those meetings earlier this week at the latest, but for the reasons that honorable members will have heard me reflect on in the statement I made on Monday to go to the House, it was not possible for me to be here to fix and attend those meetings. My offer, Mr. Speaker, is therefore to meet honorable members on Monday to take them and any of their advisors at the moment to bring with them through aspects of the bill in more detail and to take the committee stage on third reading on Tuesday. We will therefore not be speaking, as I indicated earlier, to take the committee stage on third reading today. But no further concerns or discussions applicable to individual coronas have not been and shall not become in any way our own particular policy and will continue to be followed by U.S. Limited instead of GRP. Mr. Speaker, this bill provides that any references to GRP shall be replaced by references to GRP Limited as may be required. This will ensure that GRP Limited, in effect, steps into the position of GRP in respect of all rights of an independent holding company. The terms and valuation for a sale of current shares will continue to be determined exactly in accordance with the relevant underwriting and practice. Indeed, all arrangements relating to the sale of current interest will continue to be administered by LPF under these new arrangements. So, although the counterparty changes from GRP to GRP Limited for Corona, they will not even have to contact any different third party entity as a result of this change. It will still be LPF that will be the point of contact even after this transaction. The transaction will therefore have no practical impact whatsoever on homeowners if they choose to sell their properties or to buy any or all of the remaining Corona shares. With this, I reiterate, nothing changes for individual coronas beyond GRP being replaced by GRP Limited. But it's bigger. The unlocking of this capital value allows the release of funds. And these funds, Mr. Speaker, will be reinvested with the value of the new coronas of interest retained and growing within the GRP structure. So, in other words, Mr. Speaker, a fair asset which was financed by our community and was not otherwise accessible to our community is now being used to fund more new affordable homes for our community. The capital value and growth of assets that were created for one generation of home purchases is now being used to create an asset for the next generation of home purchases. And this has been done at absolutely no cost or risk to the original home purchases. This investment in the new trust value demonstrates continuous international confidence in the economy of Gibraltar and entirely preserves all rights and interests of Gibraltar and homeowners. Additionally, the key factor here, Mr. Speaker, is that we are unlocking the ability to create more affordable homes without having to encumber the risk to the community with new financing costs for the period of the construction and without having to tie up capital value going forward. In doing so, Mr. Speaker, we're in effect lancing a boil best exemplified in the valedictory statement of Mr. Peter Kapala, who asked the Secretary of the Higher Government to come, in his last address during a budget session in 2015. In that year, as Sir Peter said, there are still things left to be done, but there is a real decision to the amount of housing, for example, which is historically our acute problem. There is even a limit to the amount of homeownership housing that this community, given its limited land size, can absorb. There are, I acknowledge, pending things left to do. That's a direct quote from him. We agree, Mr. Speaker, that it would be hard and be potentially unfair for this community to continue to indefinitely fund for no cost in effect subsidized affordable housing from the general resources of the nation. Instead, this mechanism provides a system where the asset initially created from those general resources is put to work for the benefit of the future generations of purchasers. Additionally, the finance required for the construction period is absorbed only by the state entity and not by the whole of the rest of the community. And in this sense, Speaker, we're delivering current housing at half of cost price for further generations of our community, with the massive discount that is represented by not charging the land value of the blocks on which the properties are built. I say that, Mr.
speak, and not just the information of this bill, but in order to ensure that honourable members of the community as a whole are reminded that when asking for more affordable homes are fixed, minus the price of the land. The price of the land is absorbed by the taxpayers as a whole, and it is not transferred. The increase in the cost of homes since our last tranche of affordable 50-50 housing, arising, of course, from the collapse of the pound against the euro since the Brexit referendum, the increased cost of construction as a result, and the ending of the recession in Spain and in Britain. Despite that, it is also important for people to remember that under our schemes, they can continue to purchase 50% of the properties for sale for half the price, and they are not prejudiced by city individuals as against 100% purchasing, as was the case under the former and the French in the 100% purchasing as their first choice. Because of that, underlying the skill are an excellent one that creates a potential for future generations of homeowners. And to their parents' families, but are the lifeblood of our growing and demanding nation. And they do things because we guarantee no change whatsoever to the current homeowners in respect of their rights and obligations or other terms and conditions as against their current counterparty, GRP, when they see their new counterparty, GIC, leaving. And this bill facilitates that way to make the conditions more even for existing homeowners, as well as for the investors who are confident also of our future and are supporting to draw this continued social economic growth. So, in fact, if we did not do this by way of legislation, we would have to ask every homeowner to consent to a separate and new subsidy, etc. So, therefore, this makes it easier for all the homeowners to work. To speak, I want to thank Susan Montenegro, PC, and Nicholas Powers and the Senate for their advice to the government. As well as Brand Property Services and the Financial Property Arm of MENA for their diligent hard work in making this scheme and to ensure the continued viability of the 50-50 scheme for our nation's working people. This is because through this bill and through this transaction, we will continue to be able to go for those who need to buy and afford this house. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, it is my pleasure to commend this bill to the House on what is in effect the 30th anniversary of the 50-50 scheme. We do recommendations, we look forward to meeting again, and we do not expect Into interest and we convert into interest action. So I'm thinking of the things that I will help Understanding this range
very loyal people. Mr. Speaker, thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, I personally cannot support this bill. There are three reasons for it. Mr. Speaker, the first is that the government is always in the detail. The opposition has no part of the detail. It is like asking the opposition to vote blind, and it is totally inappropriate in my position for the government to come to this house in those circumstances and ask the opposition for support in that way. The second, Mr. Speaker, this goes to the heart of why I don't believe that we need to support from this year, is that the Commission is running very tight numbers since 2012 in relation to public borrowing, and in particular, off-peak public borrowing. Now, I suspect, Mr. Speaker, for the reasons that the Honourable Mr. Clinton gave a few minutes ago, that while the government and the people in particular describe this as a sales in the short of the budget peak, this is a very complicated structure to allow the government to effectively borrow $165 million using the 50% share of the GNP in the state and effectively lacking in security. And the reason for that is that even part of this crisis is tied to this 50% of the illiquid assets. So we have to be more benefit at all to anybody to buy the 50% that the government owns in the real estate because we can't sell them on. Even if that increased in value, it would have no resale value because they couldn't sell it on. Therefore, that leads me to conclude that this is a very complicated question. We need to allow the government to borrow £165 million. And you see, Mr. Speaker, in 2012, 2013, we have been warning the community not only about levels of public debt, but also about the government's capacity to borrow off balance sheet. And it's one issue which the government has never ever been able to satisfy us, and I believe those in the community will know a little bit about the experience of this. It borrowed £1.3 billion, Mr. Speaker. £1.3 billion. Plus now £165 million. And we don't know how much of that has been spent. We don't know how much of that has been spent. Therefore, we can't, in fact, project many possibilities. What is economic health of the community from a public finance point of view is we can't be at the center and at the core of our discourse in relation to these things. And for government to explain to a position to support the government in those circumstances on the borders completely and utterly unreasonable and climate scale. The third reason, Mr. Speaker, is that not having the two things to say this. GIC is not subject to litigation. The manager can keep on access to rehabilitation of anybody in the experience of litigation and insolvency law would be able to tell you. Because to the extent now that the chief minister is saying that by effectively transferring this asset out of GRP into GIC, it would be putting assets out of the reach of the creditor if that creditor obtained a judgment in Spain. It is complete and utter nonsense, Mr. Speaker. Because for a period of 2 years, under the old law, for a period of 2 years, if GRP, after the transfer of asset out, if GRP were to go insolvent, the creditor would be able to trace into the hands of whoever had obtained that asset, Mr. Speaker. Particularly if it's been transferred for the purpose of keeping it beyond the reach of creditors. And we begin to see that we don't consider the central government against the GRP in Spain or whatever else that is possibly to vote. We root that we're all aware of that the government is not sitting and does not satisfy that commitment. And therefore, to suggest that this is necessary in order to protect in some way, nebulous way, in this case, from the dark hand of a creditor in Spain
another.
So, because when the other way we get a reader from the composition, I said that he wasn't my thing, he wasn't my nature. I would think that he was going to tell us that the opposition, for reasons that we have regulated in the course of teaching this pattern of our life, might want to wait to take a view in the space of what the opposition would be. So it's become increasingly clear, in varying degrees of acceptance, that the three speeches that we heard from the official edition, that they're going to vote against. That's the reason for the vote against. Half of me said, then why bother doing it? And if somebody tells you, well, I'm against this in principle, then why would you like to come into the gap in the engine room of the conduction? What is it that you want to do? How can one satisfy legal or financial curiosity? I mean, it didn't really just become to the issue of I'd like to poke with this in the engine of my hand. And I'm grateful to my company in due course for the clarity of the institution which brought to the position of the opposition in respect of the view they're going to take on this subject. Of course, we know what this position was and we remember the crime that last week and how he came to vote in the referendum. I don't know whether the leader of the opposition, from his speech, I don't know whether they were going to abstain on this bill or whether they were going to vote again. They are both in favor of how anybody is going to vote is not relevant to the purpose of the outcome. Those things are relevant to attitude, and that's why I'm going to continue to refer to it. Because I have as much clarity from the leader of the opposition how he was going to vote in the space of the bill as I don't know how he's going to vote in the referendum in the space of abortion litigation. In other words, Mr. Peterson has told us that he has to vote and that the GOP has been added to to continue to speak to the scope and logic of what their position has been,
when you fail one, you fail on at least 10% of other tests. And I'm not going to say that most people fail the whole remaining 50% before they fail. So it is not true that there is complete liquidity in these assets because we have one gone. There is no time when we know we are going to see that thing, and it will be required in this month, but there is really a market in the market. But they are in favor of people who will do this, even though they're selling assets that we need, and that they don't think that we need, are creating more of. So the day that they sell a property in the real estate, they break ground to grow that. In their own front to build the houses. They sell 200, they build 300. It is very difficult to reconcile the logic. Then, because the approach to the system is to recreate the investment over those 10 years of property, so to build a different mortgage and then to buy things. So, because we want to have a discussion about whether you think it is more appropriate to sell for a mortgage, then we can also have a very interesting view. Whether I'm expecting to have characterization, but we can have a very interesting view to continue to mortgage as long as we're maintaining the payment on the mortgage, it's not better than to sell. Why? Because if you sell, you entirely alienate. You entirely alienate the asset. You sell it, you never see it back. You have a letter written in a right to buy it back. You never see the asset back. You've lost it. So when you sell the crown jewel, you lose the ruby. And then you lose the emerald, and then you lose the diamond. If you mortgage the crown, as long as you make your payment to get the financing, you keep the ruby, you keep the emerald, and you keep the diamond. And at the end of the mortgage period, the crown is entirely both in equity and in law, yours in title. And indeed, if anybody sells during the period of the mortgage, the equity of redemption comes back to you too. So, for those who don't understand that principle, Mr. Speaker, if you mortgage the ruby for £1,000, and you make £950 of redeemed, and you don't get the last £50 of redeemed, the ruby cannot be sold for the market value by then probably £2,000, and you have to be given back all of the amounts less the amount outstanding. So the ruby sold for £2,000, the price of the stone is only entitled to the remaining 50 you didn't pay, and they have to give you back £1,950. So you can make an angle argument if you have done a mortgage, so the mortgage is better than sale. Because if you sell something that you never had to sell, you've completely alienated it for good and you've lost it. But if you mortgage it, then you're doing it by complicating it for a period of giving it back again. Now, if what you sell is that which you have already required to be sold, and in the second 50-50 property, you have passed an obligation on the co-owner to sell. When you sell, you know, time limit if you want that to happen, but an obligation to sell at least a share, 10% of what your asset is, then all you're doing is accelerating the alienation. Now, that isn't a bad thing. Well, this community is doing a very good thing for 30 years. And this testing, and that's why I alluded to your structuralism, your head selected for the bank, to survive 30 years of scrutiny. And this will always be a very good thing. And so, there are differences between single and mortgage. And in many instances, it's a very good argument to do a mortgage instead of a single. But in this instance, you have already provided the single. In the things which I suggested are still helpful and still useful in the structural parameter. And all you're doing is accelerating single. And realizing the value of single. So, Mr. Speaker, I mean, that overarching explanation I think would be helpful to our members, and I really don't think that they've understood what you say or what's going on. Mr. Speaker, you're not going to understand that you would welcome being walked through the transaction. Well, I think I have walked through such a transaction, but there is a deep underlying curiosity in our other members in the financial engineering that is behind the transaction. Now, I believe, Mr. Speaker, that this could be entitled to
room if you're not vegan, no room if you're not vegan, no. There is nothing in the rules to say they are. There is nothing in the rules to say they are. And indeed, financial engineering was done before, and we had absolutely no detail of what we were or where we are, and we were told we were not vegan, we would not be given it. So, in the context of the mortgages, the former administration did, in respect of a large amount of government property, all the detail we had was the answer to the question. And the only reason we knew that the transaction happened was because our investigation, the use of terminology that only women did not remember, discovered through questions in this house that such a rule had been practiced. Right? So, let's speak about that. And before honorable members started up that I should not be going back 8 years to the things that they were doing, I wonder if they read their press release on Facebook and Searchlight, which goes back 12 years to the things that they were doing. So I think that their people have lost in their argument for good. Now, Mr. Speaker, I think that he has pointed quite quickly in that one. Mr. Speaker, let's be very clear. I am not duty bound to explain the underlying financial benefits in action to them, but I am a volunteer to do so. In other words, they find out about this transaction because I announce it to them, and they will know the details of all the issues they have raised because I have volunteered without an obligation to do so to provide it to them. That is transparency, Mr. Speaker. To give that which you are not required to give, Mr. Speaker. And therefore, I think honourable members will also lose the argument that they are somehow left in the dark. That's the conclusion. Although I have said that I fully accept that they have not had it before the second meeting on general principles and merits. But, Mr. Speaker, that phrase is becoming increasingly anomalous in terms of literally by the last time of the fifth or in this particular month, the sooner, although not anymore, Mr. Speaker. The honourable Mr. Beaton has made abundantly clear. So I might walk them through details, I might take them to financial jobs, I might take them to any specific investment that I might imagine. And yet, as a matter of principle, as I indicated, he stands on his view that they would not support both. And despite therefore, having no reason to take them to the underlying quality of the transaction done here, I volunteer to continue to do so. Why do I want to keep the community? Because this is a transaction, Mr. Speaker, that we must be proud of the community, not just because of the cleverness of the financial engineering, but because of the value to our community. And the ingenuity in finding a mechanism that delivers this way forward in a way that addresses the thing that the Honourable Speaker of Honour has said in the last term by this about the Speaker trying to vote for the House. So, I really do think that concerns about public finances, et cetera, are things that Mr. Phillips rightly says they have been expected for some time in the receipt to the rule, and in particular, he said that he's been expected to have been since 2012, and I wanted to highlight the juxtaposition of those propositions because, first of all, I think they're true. They have been saying that, and they are consistent in that, and they've been saying it since 2012. And therein, Mr. Speaker, lies the great incongruency and contradiction. And this goes back to the thing that I said in the course of my presentation. Therein goes almost the utter political discrimination in their approach. Because by taking the position that they took since 2012, they demonstrated that they had no concerns one day when they were in charge of this, and yet the following day they start to express themselves about the self same peak, with the self same cargo, with the self same length. That literally, and it sticks in my mind today, because the honourable members know, if honourable members were thinking, we have concerns. From 2015, well, look, speaking to the whole parliament, that's the whole parliament, we've done up all our projects, you know, this is a good reason to say that that same book to you, but look what we gave you 3.5 years, and look at where you are. They have confirmed today that what I have always been highlighting, namely, the Tuesday, except that from the moment we were elected, we've pulled the handbrake on a number of projects, because they know that the surrogate for the remaining opening of this house, their former leader told us, no, sorry, their former leader, told us that they were prepared to support the resolution to raise the debt ceiling. Because they knew that they were reaching the debt ceiling. They knew that the things which I had said in my apparently devious Facebook video were true. Because if they weren't, then they wouldn't have gone up here. They have to say, look, we know that there's a debt ceiling is coming, and we're going to support the resolution of this house, because we didn't think that required when we're getting near the debt ceiling, the resolution of this house, which part of some government majority in the city says, we would have not given the support to exceed the debt limit. I started to speak up in 2012, noble gentlemen, by the mouth diet, the speech that is speaking in this debate, tells us that they already have the concerns about the finances. Thank you for making that clear, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for making it that clear. Speaker, probably you think you're taking a responsible position, with which I cannot argue. He wants to have the detail before he makes up her mind. Look, if that is the case, I sincerely believe that we will be able to engineering that we will show on the moment. I know that those are advising to the length of the issues that have been raised by her and by other honourable members in relation to this issue, so that we're able to take you to those parts of the transaction at the time that we have the meeting, and then you can make up a mind. If it's helpful, Mr. Speaker, normally you probably consider that she's sought a meeting with us on the floor. We have that meeting, I think, as a result, where we made some of the fears, but not all of them, eventually now saying that we've had the meeting, and that some of the fears have been related that we may have still continued. And consequently, we're a legitimate point of opposition. I thank her for taking the responsible view that she's taken to. Mr. Speaker, the Clinton starts his address with the word regrettable. Now, Mr. Speaker, regrettably, his speech went on just to ask the same question he had asked before, and so it's the same cynical view that he told us last week, I think on any television intervention, that he was just cynical, and that's the way that he approached life. Well, Mr. Speaker, living a cynical life may be fun for some. In my view, in politics, we are right to keep a cynical view in respect of the position of the United Kingdom and Spain on many issues that relate to Gibraltar. But, you know, when it comes to the growth of this community, the investment in this community, and the ability of this community to continue to deliver affordable homes for our families that are the lifeblood of the village of their nation, I am a good, not simple. And this government has demonstrated an ability through this transaction with the ingenuity of those advising us, not least the financial secretary, which enables us to continue to build on that growing ambition for this community. And I commend Gandhi. And so, Mr. Speaker, yes, this growth is not keeping in the secular transaction that is completed. And that must not be wrong. Well, Mr. Speaker, all of the bills of this court that come to this house are about the investment of the people. That is why they are required. And indeed, whether this was a borrowing or not, Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Mr. Peterson has suggested that he thinks it is, whether it was a borrowing or not, whether it was the government's direct borrowing or not, as I explained to Mr. Clinton in my reply to his very mediocre budget address this year, all of such transactions come to this house post-completion. In other words, when we enter into a direct borrowing for the government for the financial institution, whether it's Barclays or that law for any other bank, Mr. Speaker, that is laid in the house after it is done. There's no question of the House being asked whether the government should or should not enter into a financial transaction. That is not the way that our Parliament is structured, Mr. Speaker. There is no approval pre-completion of these transactions, and therefore there is absolutely nothing unusual about coming to this House to tidy up an existing transaction that has been done for the purposes of unexplained to the House and the government. But they found out from me that has occurred, Mr. Speaker, and that they will have more details. So the big honourable members agree with us saying we understand everything that we're doing and we support it. But we don't, therefore, now expect to be didn't have time to brief us before you could do it. So let the speaker even understand what we're doing. They understand the political issues that Gibraltar is facing. And if we explain to them why we have to deal with the day today, then I would expect them to say, well, look, fair enough. And if you can do this, you're not going to support the bill because A, B, C. But today, we understand why you haven't been able to brief us, but we're not going to support you because you haven't given us any detail at this stage of the state of general principles of merit, and then not ask for general principles of merit, then ask for granular details of the law that doesn't go to general principles of merit. It, in my view, is entirely contradictory, and can only be through a process of deep cynicism, seeking to have that granular detail provided to be because it's something that the honourable gentleman has a particular cynical curiosity about. So we didn't need to speak up. I have told him that I am a volunteer in providing that detail in meetings that will be held, and I even told him that they can bring an unelected members of that political commission if they like and see those meetings. The government has input in another government building. The other gentleman has asked other questions which we will have the answers to, but the government is certainly not sold at an undervalue, so that somebody feels that they're sitting on a great heap of an investment that is sold at an undervalue. In terms of general principles of merit, that is what we have explained. And I explained it in the context of my budget program. The Honourable Gentleman started away and found some detail that he wanted to raise and wants more detail. I'm not sure. But in terms of explaining general principles of merit, we have explained them at the beginning. Indeed, the general principles behind this bill are actually very, very, very attractive. And I think I've explained them in a way that it would therefore be untrue and illegitimate to say that this is a system that can somehow be described as financial alchemy. We have explained exactly what we're doing. We are selling these assets. We are accelerating the sale of these assets that are trusting are to be sold at a later time. And so therefore, to pick up the same kind of alchemy is to go back to 1998 and to be simple about the fact that land has been created, that homes are going to be won, that people are going to buy them, that the government is going to retain 50% of them, that people will eventually take that 50%, selling an additional 10% of the government's interest at any time, or indeed the whole 50% that people want it. That, Mr. Speaker, might have been described by some at the time. Indeed, I'm afraid that if I went back to the handbook of the dark time, I would find mirage and alchemy and other such references. In fact, I think I did in the same passage that I quoted at him in the reply to my budget address. But now, Mr. Speaker, to call that alchemy with 30 years of performance and indicator as to when people sell it, etc., is simply to deny the underlying reality of that super ingenious idea, which the GSOP first introduced under Gerald Salmon in 1988, and which has been really the main artery through which this community has grown its prosperity and its precious and valuable resource, its people and its families, because those are the ones that create this mentality. And he's a particular thing that I think I've said with enough before, that I am enormously humbled by the fact that what Joseph Salmon did in the first Secretary of Administration did, and he's very continuous to say, also for not enough, but some and clearly to the state, has a clear and direct effect on the demographic interval. In other words, it's bigger. In the field, the number of babies born in the world is larger. You don't call into the state, the number of babies born every year is now over 400. So it's clear what people get up to in these homes. They are building to rotate economies, Mr. Speaker. And therefore, this is not just about bricks and mortar, Mr. Speaker. This is about building relationships, strengthening families, and growing the Gibraltarian population, Mr. Speaker. When Gerald Salmon said that the two most precious things that we have are our land and our people, he found out a way to make more land and to make more people. And this is and boy, did we make more people. as usual, have come to find a new level of intellectual, I wouldn't put it that way, of debating affection for the Honourable Mr. Keaton, because all of the viruses, which is just means that he's becoming more and more a black and white politician. And you know, he left no room for that. The figure, we cannot support this thing. What the point of my being in the world is, but we cannot support this thing. First of all, because we don't have a visa, well, I think I've dealt with that already, and not working blind, because in terms of general principles in America, I've given them more than we would have got from them at any time already, let alone the more that we're going to give them. Although I know that when we gave them more detail in the questions of the 300 million transactions, they just were more, in their view, emboldened to be against it rather than persuaded to support it. But look, that's up to them. I mean, not for one moment saying that they're going to see how wrong they are just because they're in the detail. They have a monopoly on being obdurate and continuing to be wrong despite being shown the reason why it should change the view, and that is opposed to the position which I will never speak to persuade him out of. The second speaker, this issue about being very careful about borrowing off balance. Well, Speaker, thank you for the clarity on that. I've already said what I need to say about the analysis from 2012, and he's completely right. And his position is so entirely different to that set out by the proposal indeed, Mr. Cleveland. He then does, Mr. Speaker, this issue has become particularly valuable from the moment he became emboldened to do so when he took over as the then leader of the opposition in 2013. Which is an attempt to do what he finally described as my point earlier, the old lady's son, right, of what the glory of the government is, without any indication as to amount not spent, amount repaid, amount invested, amount mortgaged, amount borrowed, amount realized, amount forget all of the sophistication of modern finance. Forget architect and forget engineers of finance as a figure just the title, the size, the size of the envelope, and the old lady's sum. Well, look at the figure. It will be held a political non-nefahili, Mr. Speaker, even if that is his approach to finance. But look, if you wish to think about it, I can just tell him that he's completely wrong, Mr. Speaker, in the sum that he's intending to do. And he'd be particularly wrong to now continue to add to the error of his ways by adding another £165 million. In particular, now that we have told that these transactions and the acceleration of a series of particular amounts and the construction finance in another particular period. It would be kind of point, Mr. Speaker, to any government in our history that has developed affordable homes without, by the way, farming that out to a developer to do, or raising construction finance against it. Simple, Mr. Speaker. And they did both. In one instance, they raised construction finance and built both for affordable and for rental, and in one, they found out for developers. Do I need to remind them of what happened there? They lost their trust, Mr. Speaker. They lost their trust with the developer. They lent money, taxpayers' money to the developer, and lost it. What is what they did? So, Mr. Speaker, in terms of La Punta Marina, if we were to do La Punta Marina in terms of their affordable home adventures, La Punta Marina is not even a church. La Punta Marina is a church. It's a not the most attractive proposition. And so, Mr. Speaker, it is just absolutely unfair and unfeeling because he's involved in the world of sophisticated financial engineering, and he practices the system who does those transactions with litigation, who defends those transactions, and the speaker this year. The speaker of his son, of which I am also a partner on sabbatical, advertises their expertise in this respect. And then we praise his brother here in the discussion of all this. So there's nothing wrong with sophisticated financial engineering. So it's the way of the modern world, Mr. Speaker. But what is remarkable is that we should try in making this decision to bring the government down only to the benefit of, pounds, shillings, and pence style calculations. And Mr. Speaker, I do think that it is important that we do realize who our advisors are and the perspective that they think it is time that we give them comfort, I think. Mr. Speaker, into the question of GRP and political divisions. I have to very little about that. The Oregon launched into a tirade about it. For Michigan, the bargaining field is something that can pass quicker than people might imagine. I'm just thinking that a way of thinking. If you refer to the field, it's also known in the lexicon of the law as the bargaining field. The bargaining field is sometimes passes quicker than people expect. And I won't say more, Mr. Speaker, but I don't know whether you pretended by raising red herrings to take the example of one of the Conservative candidates in the United Kingdom who held up in one of his speeches this week. Because you felt, to me, Mr. Speaker, that he was holding up the red herring in an attempt with the smell to try and distract it from the lack of merit in the arguments that he was putting. But I will tell them more, Mr. Speaker, on this issue in the context of the discussion that we are going to have. I don't know whether he is going to attend. I don't know whether he is going to attend that meeting, whether he's allowed to attend for his party. But if he does, then of course we will have the ability to better understand the issues that arise and why we say, Mr. Speaker, that that particular piece of litigation is one of the most rotten parts of the legacy of the party. Obviously, and one of the main reasons why we would never be able to defend that what the electorate will do is in any way a golden legacy in this case. So, Mr. Speaker, for all of those reasons, and having, I think, set out now adequately why the interventions of members for the official opposition deserve little merit by way of determining how members of this House will vote, I would ask that they reevaluate their view, that they consider perhaps even the more responsible position of the Honourable Lady, because they will look at those opinions that we've seen that of this transaction. Otherwise, what they will be saying to the House is that they are simply against the mechanism designed to guarantee the continuation of the affordable housing scheme for generations of civilians, despite the fact that having seen the effect of the transaction, which is likely to make it very comfortable indeed, and may decide that they support it. But I would ask them this. They should be keeping hold with the other institution, depending on his mood or sometimes afraid in his mind to be clearer and more honest about his views, given that he sometimes tells us that this is a moment in politics when he's about to go into the horizon, although sometimes he knows that people inside him with his fingers see that he can stay and keep going. They should look at the opposition here. Honestly and genuinely, not just simply, not just to try and score for the point, if they're able to. But if they do, if they look at it genuinely, and if they understand the principles, and if they genuinely listen to the people, they could find themselves in government, very specific, even for good. So they might then say, the morning after the election, well, you know what, it wasn't such a bad thing, actually, we were just doing it for the sake of trying to garner a few votes, but look how badly that went for them on having to do the last one of those If they vote no to do it, and if they look at the gaps, and if they see to themselves, and if they're genuine, and if they're honest, on Tuesday, I invite them to vote in favour of the bill. I commend the bill. I now put a question, which is that the Bill for an Act to make provision for the assignment, transfer, and vesting of certain rights, interests, and obligations from Gibraltar Residential Property Limited to GIC Limited, the extension of the assignment and transfer of registration requirements under the Land Titles Act 2011, for the notice of the assignment and transfer for relevant parties and financial institutions, and for collective purposes, be read a second time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? The Honourable Lady is abstaining. Carried. The Gibraltar Residential Properties Limited Assignment, Transfer, Vesting, Registration, and Notice Act 2019. I think I'd like to give notice that the committee stating those readings be taken on Tuesday. And at that convenient moment, I would move that the House is now adjourned to next Tuesday at 10:30 in the morning. The House will now adjourn to next Tuesday at 10:30 in the morning.